It's simple. Shipping, logistics, capacity, access. We are connecting America's heartland to the rest of the world. It's not just about shipping. It's a story about how we're constantly innovating, how we move our products around the world. Cleveland is a port city. We've always been a port city. This is Great Lakes Forward.
First, I want to welcome everyone to Season 2, Episode 2 of Great Lakes Forward. I'm Jay Davis, Vice President of External Affairs here at the Port of Cleveland. And today, I'm welcoming Mark Barker with Interlake Steamship Company. Interlake Steamship Company is a family-owned, modern marine transportation business that has been operating on the Great Lakes since 1913. Their fleet of 9 vessels carry into the largest dock with 1,000-foot class vessels, like the dubbed Queen of the Great Lakes, the Paul R. Jugurtha, and the tightest of docks with the versatile river class vessels that they also use to deliver cargo. Again, we welcome Mark Barker today, president of Interlake Steamship Company, the Great Lakes Forward.
Thank you. It's great to be here and appreciate you having me on.
Definitely. Thanks for taking out the time. I know it's a busy time right now. A lot of things economically in light of the late winter and spring COVID-19 crisis and just all the impacts directly and indirectly that's having in shipping and industry and the economy in general. So we appreciate you taking out the time. So our audience may not know what specific role that carriers and companies like Interlake Steamship provide to Great Lakes. You know, would you just give a little bit of background about the company and your background in this industry, Mark?
Sure, I'd love to. So we're one of the several domestic carriers that operate on the Great Lakes. So we're U.S. owned, U.S. crewed, and U.S. built ships operating under the U.S. Jones Act. And, you know, we play the critical role of supplying our nation's, steel mills, power generation, construction industries with raw materials like iron ore, aggregate, limestone, and coal for the power gen, plus a lot of salt for de-icing roadways. We do it on our fleet of 9 vessels, part of a 52 U.S. flag fleet in the Great Lakes. We operate from March to January. Mainly our season closes down in the winter due to the closure of the Sioux Locks in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. So we as a company carry about 20 million tons of raw materials for customers like Cliffs, ArcelorMittal, Cargill, Carmoose, Farge, and so on. It plays an important role of mainly moving those materials from mines in Michigan and Minnesota, as well as Cleveland and elsewhere to the places of use. And we do it through efficient large ships. As you mentioned, we have the longest ship in the Great Lakes, the Paul R. Jugurtha, down to the Tug Dorothy Ann Pathfinder, which is our small maneuverable river class ship of 700 foot. That's really important driver of the economy for the Great Lakes region. As you know, the Great Lakes combined with Canada and US is the third largest economy if you add it as a form of GDP in the world. This is an important part of it.
So Mark, when you talk about the mines in Minnesota, Michigan, could you talk about what that entails as far as what kind of mines and kind of specific cargo that you're getting from those mines and delivering?
So in Minnesota and Michigan, we'll first start with the iron ore mines. So the Great Lakes are blessed with lots of iron ore. Originally, it was pretty high concentrated ore. As we used it over time, the Great Lakes really became the place where we invented the pelletizing process, in which we took a lower grade ore and made it into a higher grade ore and turned it into what they call pellet, which looks a lot like a marble. The pellet has a couple of neat features to it, and that one, it can be used in the blast furnaces, but it makes moving iron ore extremely efficient as it flows much better than clump ore, and it's actually more efficient than blast furnaces. So those mines have big pelletizers. They're just like big kilns, in which they actually now, they use limestone to make what they call a flux pellet, and then which they actually are mixing the raw materials at the pellet stage that's used in a blast furnace. So that allows us then to load pellets in Duluth, Superior, Two Harbors, Silver Bay, Marquette, take it down to Indiana, Gary, Detroit, Toledo, Cleveland. And mainly we deliver it right to the blast furnace. In some cases, we'll drop it on a dock and they'll rail it to the last few miles to the mill. And that's really supporting our blast furnace industry in the United States, which is making the automotive steel, the white metal steel for appliances and some oil and gas products and some electrical. And then the other mines that are actually in the middle of Michigan are the limestone mines, which are some of the largest limestone quarries in the United States. And those are mining limestone for mainly construction, but also flue gas treatment. Mm-hmm. And also the steel industry as well. It's used as a product into the blast furnace. So we picked that up in harbors like Cedarville and Drummond Island and Port Inland and Roger City, Alpena, and we'll haul that down to the major city centers for use in the construction business and steel industries. We still have the coal business for the remaining power gen units that are powering mainly Michigan, and that's actually bringing Powder River Basin coal, low sulfur coal from the Wyoming range into Superior and then transloaded into our ships and taken down in the Detroit, Michigan area.
So you guys are in a ton of industries, many of which are critical to our economics, especially in this part of the country. A lot of people don't realize we just make a lot of stuff in this part of the country. And what we see in Cleveland, again, is not just steel, it's also, you know, energy, it's also construction area and all these kind of things that sort of make our world go around. And so being that 2019 was a big year for your company, the president even mentioned Interlake Steamship Company by name for your efforts to build the first vessel on the Great Lakes in over 35 years. Can you tell us what that was like for you and a little bit about the construction of a new vessel?
Yeah, so we're super thrilled to be building a new vessel, our first vessel in 35 years, and the first actually full-blown vessel built on the U.S. side in 35 years as well. There's been some other tug barge units either converted or built in the time frame, but this is the first ship. We're pretty excited because it's really based for Cleveland. It's going to be hauling a lot of salt from the Cargill mine in Cleveland. And it's really designed to be super capable, be able to go into all the small ports, but be able to carry effectively so it can compete in all ports. We announced the contract with Bay Ship in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, and we cut steel on it last summer. And so we're getting ready to lay the keel in the dry dock actually next month. And so it's going really well. It's a 640 by 78 foot wide ship with a forward mounted boom. That forward boom will be the first forward boom we've had in our fleet in a while, and that really lets it have some more capability to reach and unload at some of our customers' docks in places where we can't reach with aft booms just because of the dock layout. I think what's really neat about it is that it's mainly built with steel produced on the Great Lakes. So we haul the iron ore to Burns Harbor in Indiana. They make plate in Burns Harbor, and we've bought our plate for that ship in Burns Harbor and shipped it up to Sturgeon Bay. So it's really a full cycle going around. We deliver the raw materials, they make the steel, we put it back into a ship that will then deliver raw materials again for that mill. So it's a really great Great Lakes story about the importance of shipbuilding and how it drives jobs and economic growth.
It's amazing just all the multipliers that you could see from just the shipbuilding, but from the shipping in itself and the movement and handling of materials and things like that. And so I think that's why it's so critical that we get these stories out beyond even just the Great Lakes or just beyond the maritime industry, so we can all think of just different ways in the shipping and logistics and movement, transportation of goods that can continue to drive commerce, especially given that we're in a time of economic uncertainty now. So efficiency will be critical. Multipliers from that efficiency will be critical as well. With vessel number 10 for Interlake Steamship Company, and we're talking about this efficiency and multiplier, what does that landmark mean to you and your company now, Mark, with this new vessel coming on board? What will it be christened?
Okay. We'll launch it next year in 2021, and then we'll christen it in 2022, hopefully in Cleveland. But this ship is a culmination of a lot of effort over the past 10 or 15 years of really us looking at our fleet and looking at the industry and our customers and saying, how do we support our customers and support the region? And the way we can do that is reinvestment. And we've reinvested in repowering our current ships. We have the blessing of fresh water, the largest bodies of fresh water in the world. And that fresh water keeps our ships in the steel around a long time, which is good news. But it means that they sometimes the equipment wears out before the ship wears out. And so what we've had to do over the past 10 to 15 years is reinvest in our existing equipment in our ships by repowering, re-engining, and bringing them up to a more modern standard and an environmental standard. And so we've been doing that since 2006 with repowers and re-engines. And then with some of the emission rules around air emissions, we've installed exhaust gas scrubber units, which help clean our exhaust stack and actually lower the emissions below that of burning ultra low sulfur diesel. And then through that, we did all those and really got our fleet reliable and efficient and environmentally friendly. And then really this culminates from that whole effort into now we really get to build a new ship and integrate all the modern technology and hull form and propeller design and engines to really bring forth really the new generation of Great Lakes shipping in a modern hull form and power package.
I fully understand what you're saying with the sustainability and trying to continue to drive down the footprint of our movement, of our industry within the Great Lakes. I mean, we are one of the founding members of Green Marine, and not only do we take that seriously, we actively work at our port to clean out the river, to clean out debris, through driving down emissions. We're looking at shore power and ways in order to be able to power ships while they're idle per se at our docks and be able to still provide power to them and things like that. I think all these technologies will just continue to become more a part of how we operate here in the U.S. when it comes to maritime. And it's good to see us in the Great Lakes sort of be on the cutting edge of that.
Yeah, I think sustainability is a big role, and we're proud to be the first U.S. carrier to be a part of Green Marine as well. I think what's neat about our industry, especially the U.S. domestic fleet, is that we live, work, and play all in the same region. Our folks are from Cleveland. They're from Toledo. They're from Roger City. They're from Duluth. And then our ships live and ply in these waters, you know, all the time, 100%. And so it's our responsibility as a company and as an operator, not only to ensure that we can deliver the cargo that our region needs and our economy, actually our national economy and national security needs, because we're making steel for the military and a lot of these steel mills, but we're also doing it in a responsible way for the long-term health of the region, not only economic health, but, you know, environmental health.
And that's going to be critical going forward. I think even more so given our current health situation with COVID, I think continuing to focus in on those things. We operate in our drinking water, so we have to definitely take care and make sure that we're doing everything we can to not only not have an impact, but to also continue to improve the quality of that resource. Because, you know, again, we're blessed to have this resource of the Great Lakes and the fresh water, and that helps things last. And we got to make sure that we help the water last as well. Speaking of these sort of improvements, now, what is the biggest change in the fleet that you've seen in your lifetime? And what are you expecting on the horizon as far as maybe fleet design, if you guys continue to build more ships, or if other companies are, or industry standards? What do you see the biggest changes thus far and going forward?
Well, I think we see in the rest of the world and other sectors of transportation, it's really harnessing technology in the right ways. And there's a lot, and that comes in a lot of forms. One is we've installed technology to help with emissions and water treatment and other things. There's more to come on that. There's a lot of challenges with some of this technology and ensuring that it works appropriately and efficiently. And there's also the technology on the ship. How do we make the ship a safer ship? How do you automate it in the appropriate way? And we actually are testing equipment along the lines of artificial intelligence and automation systems. And actually, when we repowered our ships, we became the first U.S. carrier to run an unmanned engine room. A lot of people said that would be very challenging, and we made it work, and it works very well. But I think as we look forward, how do we adapt technologies on our ships that are being adapted shoreside, understanding that there's a scale issue and that we use much more horsepower and we use bigger motors and other things. And how can you take what is being developed and done in electrification and other things and apply it to a ship? And it's being done around the world. We have some uniqueness in that the Great Lakes are not vast open oceans, but narrow channels and to navigate. And so at the same time we do it, we need to take and make sure that we're doing our due diligence and ensuring the technology is appropriate for where we're sailing and how we're navigating, as well as how we operate. So I think it's an exciting time in the shipping and transportation industries, but there's also a lot of ideas that aren't totally vetted yet. And so while everyone's eager to get to a zero carbon place or a zero discharge place, I think we have to also ensure that we're doing it in a way that ensures the safety of our crews, the safety in the environment, and safety of those that we navigate around.
Safety and that, those efficiency things like that. We've been doing those kind of investments. We're also looking at expanding our front gate in order to have better entrance exits to and from our port, thinking on that same matter of just which ways can we continue to move cargo that's going to be efficient, that's going to have less slowdown, able to be done quicker, and also limit some contacts and things like that right now. And also at our bulk terminal, which I'm quite sure you're aware of, we've been doing a lot of renovations with the bulkheading, Cleveland Bulk Terminal. We're making sure now we can fit two ships in at the same time, loading, unloading, and also going to be looking at starting later this year on an underground tunnel for the iron ore movements as well, in order to be able to better separate and load and unload ore and different products at the bulk terminal. Again, hoping to be able to cut down the number amount of time that the ships have to be sitting there idle for loading and unloading. Again, all these things, I think efficiency is going to be key in just not only lowering emissions, but also getting things delivered in a timely and quicker manner. The longer we can keep the stuff on the ship moving to the destination, the cheaper and the more efficient these products can be moved.
You guys are really doing a nice job in leadership of infrastructure. That I've been on that dock. It's a great dock. And we do a lot of cargo at that facility. And it's nice to see that. I think it's important that everyone thinks that way and that we are a system and the system is only as efficient as its weakest link. And so we need to continually look at this. This whole industry was developed around efficiency and it's pretty amazing. But now we have to ensure that we are all reinvesting in it.
Yeah, we work very hard. Justin, and we've gotten some help from the state recently, I think, and some other states are doing this as well with our maritime assistance program here at the state of Ohio. We want to definitely give kudos to Governor DeWine and then also our legislators there in the state house and the state senate for seeing the need to invest in these things. And we plan on utilizing those funds as much as we can to not only reinvest, but again, every time we're doing a project, people are working as well in various construction trades and all the other ancillary products, cement, steel, bulkheading, the bollards, all those kind of things in order to be able to execute those projects. But more importantly, when you can come and now have two ships in at the same time, again, that's more cargo being moved, that's more efficiency of cargo, and again, more people working. And that's one of the driving forces of what we're doing at the Port of Cleveland and through every port in the Great Lakes right now.
Yeah, it's great to see Ohio stepping forth and understanding where maritime plays a role in their economy. I think some of the other Great Lakes states, to other extents, are doing the same, but it's really important for the states to appreciate and understand the economic drivers that maritime brings to their states. Mm-hmm. And reinvest. So in Ohio's taking a great leadership role in that, and it's great to see.
Yeah, definitely. I tell people, like, we're a maritime state. I mean, and it's funny, I'm quite sure you hear this. People come and fly in, maybe you guys' offices here in the Cleveland area, and be like, man, what was that water that we flew by? And like, that's Lake Erie. You're like, oh, it's that big? That looks like an ocean. Like, well, it's not quite an ocean, but it's definitely not your local neighborhood pond. And we definitely utilize it as much as we can, since it's not the local neighborhood pond. We're a maritime state. I think many of our states are. Just a matter of telling that story. If I look at this present situation now, how do you see carriers in the Great Lakes being impacted by the present circumstances with COVID, sort of economic uncertainty at the start of 2020 navigation season. And what has that meant for Interlake?
The COVID crisis, I think we're all feeling the impact, and you know, we can't be thankful enough for the frontline workers who are putting themselves out there to ensure people are safe and can recover from this COVID virus. But the precautions that the states have taken were dramatic and drastic and quick. I think that was showing that it's working, but it also has huge economic impacts, because I don't think any one business model had the entire states or the country literally coming to a grinding halt at once. We started the season off with a really good demand, really what we thought was going to be a robust year. If you talk to me in early March, late February, we were very optimistic about the year. But then with the shutdowns and the automakers shutting down, really pushing the demand for steel almost down to nothing, we went from a steel utilization rate in the low 80s to below 55. And that really made everyone pause. The mines have stopped production on a short-term basis. A lot of steel makers have idled their furnaces. And so it's been a very interesting and dynamic time. We sailed the fleet ready to go, with then having to lay up a few boats for short-term as we deal with just this capacity issue or lack of demand. We're hopeful, as things seem to be flattening out, that we're starting to hear about how the automakers are starting to come back slowly. Economies are starting to reopen. We're hopeful that that will get the demand start to increase. I think, again, it's going to be a time will tell situation, and how fast does it ramp back up, and what is the demand when it does ramp up? While we were going into a very strong demand, I think it's going to be a more of a U, and we're going to have to climb our way out of this. But, you know, that's part of the Great Lakes. We're a 113-year-old company, and we faced many challenges, and this is just another one of those challenges that you face. Mm-hmm. And we have a great team and a great group of employees and partners in our work. And, you know, our goal now is to work with our customers and our employees and get through this time, and hopefully by the fall, at least we're starting to see how we are recovering, a late summer, early fall, that we're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. But I think this is going to be around for a while. We've already changed our policies and adapted to ensure the safety of our crews and our customers when we're at their facilities. And we're going to need to be vigilant as we go forward to ensure that we keep that going, so that we don't go back down and dip again, but we're grinding forward and getting back to where we were before this happened.
I could tell you, we're definitely hopeful that recovery comes sooner rather than later for a myriad of reasons, you know, not just health and wealth, but just, again, getting back to the focus being on innovation and how we can improve quality of life through our businesses, through what we're doing each and every day. We definitely want to get back to having more and more of those conversations for the long term. And again, innovation is going to be key to that, whether we're talking about health and sciences or whether we're talking about how we're going to get this Tassonite delivered to the steel mill. I think we're going to have to all be focused on that kind of innovation and safety as we go forward from here on out. Mark, I just want to leave some time open for you to share a little bit about what you hope the future for the Great Lakes Seaway system looks like in the coming years.
It's multifold. You know, we've invested in our fleet. We're really making a huge investment in our new ship. And, you know, we see that throughout the Great Lakes on both sides of the border. And I think the Great Lakes Seaway system is such a critical road sort of into the heartland of our country and both of our countries, Canada and U.S. alike. And so I think it's important that we continue. And I think we have, as a system, been doing a great job of trying to get the message out why it matters. Why does the Great Lakes Seaway matter? And we're starting to see, you know, I think all sorts of interesting and opportunities from, is it wind products? Is it cruise ships? That we have an important system. You know, it's the backbone of our system is bulk goods. It's steel, it's iron ore, it's coal, it's stone, it's salt, grain, and it's how we get products in the Great Lakes and also how we export it. And I think where I'm hopeful is we continue to innovate. I think all three sectors, the domestic fleets on both sides are innovating. I think you have investment from from the saltwater ships that make their way into the Great Lakes and play a critical role. And the ports are, as you said, are investing as Cleveland is. And I think that momentum, even though we're having a little bit of a hiccup with this economic and health issue that in the COVID-19 crisis, what I'm hopeful and excited about is that there's real energy about the future and where we can take it. And I think that's at the federal levels as well as the state levels. And I think you saw that in Ohio and how they're stepping to the plate, and the other states are as well. The future is bright. We got to keep moving ahead. It's never an easy road. And there's people that would want to be naysayers. And at the end of the day, the only way we can prove them wrong is just to keep pushing ahead like we are as a group, as a system. The system is interdependent on all three major forms of waterborne, and that the two domestics, Canadian, US, and the saltwater trade are critical all together. We can't, it's like a three-legged stool. We can't survive without each other, and the system can't survive. So we got to continue to promote, and we got to continue to push ahead and innovate, and to make sure people understand the value proposition that we bring to the region and to the nation, having this system functional and improve it.
I really do appreciate that whole outlook, Mark. As we close out this episode, considering everything that's going on, considering what we're going to be doing as we rethink what manufacturing looks like here in America, what we think about what needs to be made here in America and all these kind of things, what does Made in America mean for Interlake Steamship?
I think it really comes to the Jones Act. Made in America means we're built in America, we're owned by Americans, and we're crewed by them. And it's really an important aspect as not only you look at the Great Lakes, but you look at all our inland waterways and all our connecting waterways and our coasts, and that it's a matter of national security to ensure that we have a workforce that can build ships, that can unload ships, that can crew ships, and that we can have our own merchant force as well, and that supports our naval force. And it brings border security and economic security to our nation. In the time of conflict abroad, we need to ensure that if we're going to put troops abroad, we should need to be able to get their supplies to them. And the only way we can do that is with a strong merchant navy and a merchant fleet. And that plays so many components, from the port workers to the shipyard workers to the men and women on the ships themselves, to ensure that we have the vessels and the people to carry out critical component of our nation.
You know, we understand that here at the Port of Cleveland. We're glad that we can work so closely with your company and others, both here domestically and then also around the world as well, as we look to foster economic development, to continue to encourage jobs, to continue to encourage growth and grow the quality of life and vitality here, not just our region, but just here in the Great Lakes as well. And so we thank you, Mark. Thanks for sharing that insight. We really do appreciate it. We appreciate what Interlake Steamship does for not only just the Great Lakes, but for American economy in general. We look forward to working with you going forward in future conversations.
Well, we appreciate this. And again, we appreciate our partnership with the Port of Cleveland and all the ports and the system as a whole. So thank you, and look forward to working with you going forward.
We're going to go into our CEO corner with Port of Cleveland President and CEO Will Freeman. Will, just want to get your opinion on where we are with the current shipping season and what needs to happen to encourage the continued relevance of Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Seaway shipping and growth in Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Seaway shipping going into the future.
Well, thanks, Jade. It's great to be back again. By the time our audience hears this, it'll be later in 2020, and I hope we've all returned to more normal lives by then. Optimistically, I believe we will be. So let me talk about trade through the St. Lawrence Seaway in and out of the Great Lakes, where we are, of course, in Cleveland on Lake Erie. I've made no secret of the fact that I want to see reforms and changes in the way both the U.S. and Canadian governments administer the St. Lawrence Seaway. Just as a reminder for listeners, or maybe it's the first time they're thinking about this navigation system, the St. Lawrence Seaway was a joint project of the Canadian and U.S. governments when it was built in the 1950s. And it's still managed by the two governments cooperatively. The Canadians administer and operate the portions of the Seaway that are on the Canadian side of the border, and the U.S. St. Lawrence Seaway Development Corporation, which is the formal name, operates and manages the side of the system that's on the U.S. side. The St. Lawrence Seaway Development Corporation is a part of the U.S. Department of Transportation. So getting agencies of federal governments to change how they do things is slow and hard, and they operate under mandates from their governments, and they operate within the confines of whatever statutes apply to them on either side of the border. So how do we make change, and why? Well, the why is because I think we would benefit here in Ohio and across the Great Lakes if we could operate this system differently into the future. You mentioned the opening of the season, and at the closing of the season, it's a seasonal system. Going all the way back to the beginning, decision was made to close in the winter. That certainly makes some sense because we can get ice conditions in the winter, which are difficult to navigate through, difficult to operate locks when there's ice buildup, and they need to do maintenance on the locks as well at certain times of the year. So the decision was made to close it down in the winter and then restart it. That has proven to be a very difficult impediment to overcome, especially when the world went to utilizing containers and container ships to move cargo. Most of global trade, well above 90%, is moved on these big container ships that we see, and then those containers are transferred to trucks or to trains to get to wherever their final destination is. Those are year-round, very reliable, very consistent services, and when you disrupt those in the winter, it becomes very difficult for us to be competitive. My view of the world is that we could shorten the winter closure significantly, and that would make us much more competitive and attractive for the ocean carriers that would like to bring ships in closer to their customers here in the heartland in the Midwest if they could. You always want to keep cargo on a ship longer if you can. And if we were able to compress the season, the winter closure, I think we'd be much more competitive. Even in the way we open and close the system, it needs to change. This year, we didn't open until April 1st. There is too much uncertainty in that date. It moves around every year and it's not announced until a month or so before the season opening. And that's not how supply chains work. That creates too much uncertainty, and it doesn't allow for producers and receivers of goods to plan around those dates. This year in particular, we had high water. We still have high water on the Great Lakes, and that's causing high water on the St. Lawrence River as all that water flows out of the system. There's been some flooding, some limited flooding, particularly on Lake Ontario on the U.S. side. And there's been a lot of pressure, political pressure applied to the body. It's a body established under a treaty called the Boundary Waters Treaty, which regulates the flow of water out of Lake Ontario into the St. Lawrence River. If that body decides to allow for increased flows and the current gets too strong in the St. Lawrence River and the ships can't navigate safely, there was some discussion, a lot of deliberation around whether to increase those flows as we opened the season in February and into March and April. And that was why we had a delay this year. In my opinion, that was all avoidable, and that costs money, a lot of money. When you look at the economic impacts of shipping on the Great Lakes, we lost probably 10 days or so to the shipping season, and it doesn't sound like much, but you know that means we may have ships that could make an additional transit into the system toward the end of the year that will not be able to this year. In other words, we may get cut short in terms of the number of ships and the number of times they can come in and out of our system. So those are huge impacts when you look at them in terms of the revenues generated and jobs ultimately that are created by our system. And we're really just shortchanging ourselves when we don't operate the system in a more modern, efficient manner. We have technology today that would allow it. And in my opinion, it's time we move in that direction.
You mentioned a few different things there that I think we got to highlight. I mean, you're right. It may sound like, okay, 10 days here, it's 5 days this year, it's a week, it's 2 weeks this year or another year. I mean, even if you just add in just 2 or 3 years of that, you're talking about almost a month of lost work day of cargo not coming in or not being able to progress through the Great Lakes St. Lawrence Seaway system. I mean, that, again, you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars just in some delays that many folks will say could be avoided. Who do we need to appeal to in order to get these changes rolling and in order to get people to make decisions that sort of alleviate some of those uncertainties?
Well, that's a great question. And it is not a simple answer or a simple solution. So I mentioned earlier that the Seaway system itself is under the administration of, you know, two agencies, one U.S. and one Canadian. They will not, in my opinion, it's not realistic to expect them to make changes internally. They really don't have that mandate. They don't have that prerogative. So I think we need to go to Congress on the U.S. side and ask Congress to review or make a comprehensive reevaluation of the St. Lawrence Seaway, how it's currently administered and its potential. I think they probably need to be supplied with a study which looks at all of this in detail and puts numbers to it to be persuasive and to be compelling. And I think the same thing has to happen on the Canadian side. Maybe this can occur, maybe it could occur together, but it's going to take advocacy, a lot of it. I think the governors and the premiers on the Canadian side of the 7 states and provinces that border the Great Lakes have to be engaged. They've become much more attuned in the last few years to this issue. I think for a long time, rightfully, they were mainly concerned with the environmental health of the Great Lakes, and they need to continue to focus on that issue for sure. But I think more recently, they've also become aware of the potential for the Great Lakes to be a much bigger economic driver for the economies in the states and provinces around the Great Lakes. So that's a positive sign. There's now a real effort among the states with our ports and with other stakeholders to create more awareness. So it's going to start with awareness, and then hopefully we can build from there into a strategy to get some action. But I do think it'll have to be legislative, both on the Canadian and the U.S. side, in order to make these changes.
It's going to be a true international effort, things like what you're saying, and we're going to have to work at it as in our local states, our provinces, and then also looking at Ottawa and D.C., Washington, D.C. as well, to be able to look at this stuff from a holistic standpoint of what's going to be best for the economic and environmental vitality. I mean, again, I'm thinking not just shipping is cheaper to keep it on the ship. It's just less emissions to keep it on the ship as well. The further we can get into the heartland via shipping, again, that's lowering the amount of emissions from various other transportation modes of getting goods to market and getting goods to places where they need to be.
You raise a really good point. The Great Lakes, shipping on the Great Lakes through the St. Lawrence Seaway, got a bad reputation. Let's just put that out there. When people realized that ballast water was a way for invasive species to move from one part of the world to another, including here into the Great Lakes, and those invasive species have done environmental harm. All that was real. It still is. The good news is that we've moved past those days when ballast water management was unregulated. And we're now in an era where it's very, very closely regulated. Worldwide, every ship is installing ballast water management systems. And as a result, I think we're going to see very, very few of these instances when invasive species move around into places such as the Great Lakes. So good news story there is that that should be eliminated largely. So when you look at shipping into the Great Lakes sort of in the post-invasive species era, it is the greener alternative. It is a lower carbon footprint alternative. It takes congestion pressure off of coastal ports and the highways. It's safer, far safer, if you look at the statistics compared to over-the-road trucking and rail. And it has capacity without spending billions and billions of dollars as is necessary at coastal ports. So I think if all of that can be validated and we put that information in front of policymakers, it's a really compelling argument. So the onus is on us to get that started and to make that happen. And I know there are members of Congress here in the Great Lakes states who are eager to help in that regard. And then one more thing I would say is that I think it's actually more than just legislation on both sides of the border. It's time for a new treaty. The Boundary Waters Treaty is well over 100 years old. Things were very, very different, you know, in the early 19th century compared to the early 20th century, I should say, compared to today. And we need a framework for managing this important resource between the two countries that border it that reflects the realities of mid-21st century, not really in the last century. So that's where I think we need to go. It's going to take time, but the call for a new treaty is starting to get louder and louder.
I definitely think you have some folks that are within reports ourselves, on at least on the American side, who probably think the same thing. And I guarantee there may be some on the Canadian side who think the same thing as well. You know, again, we got to make sure we're opening up as much economic expansion and environmental sustainability as possible. And I think we do in the port industry in the Great Lakes have a very winning argument, an argument that makes sense in both those aspects. Financially and environmentally, of why are we not taking more advantage of this? You go to countries in Europe and you look at how they use their inland waterways and how many cars and trucks that takes off the road and how traffic congestion and things like that is, and infrastructure repair and all those kind of things are impacted by not having that as much traffic on the road, quality of life, all those kind of things. I think we have to really start looking at this from a very holistic view. What we lose by not doing it, the opportunity costed by not moving forward, I think is going to be critical as we discuss this with our stakeholders and try to come up with a plan in order to address it.
You're spot on there. It is about the opportunity cost, and I think, you know, that can be calculated. We can model this. There are certainly those economists much smarter than me who could give us the data we need to show what the upside potential is for greater use of this system. And you're absolutely right about Europe and other parts of the world. They've recognized the value of their waterways for a long time. And in some ways, I think here our history is we became such a car and highway oriented society that we really forgot about our waterways. And that needs to change. You know, I think they can be both important places for habitat. We're doing a better job getting our waterways, Great Lakes, river systems cleaned up in places where animals can thrive again. But at the same time, I think we can use it for shipping and take a lot of pressure off of highway and rail networks and lower our carbon footprint and meet the thresholds we're going to have to meet for climate change at the same time. So we can be an important part of meeting that challenge, you know, going forward. And I think that's pretty exciting, really. And it's all part of the blue economy, as they call it. You know, here in the Great Lakes, we're so fortunate to have so much fresh water. And I think as time goes on, that's going to be a really important part of reviving our economy here in general in the so-called Rust Belt, because as we know, other parts of the country and many parts of the world don't have that resource. So it's all part of taking advantage of it in a responsible manner.
I think it's going to be critical. It's going to be critical for economic expansion. I think in light of the COVID-19 crisis, being able to have as many arteries open to protect the supply chain, I think it's going to be absolutely critical and something that the public and I think many decision makers will demand on both sides of our borders here on the Great Lakes and the St. Lawrence River. So, Will, I just want to thank you again for coming back and providing that perspective on CEO Corner. It's always good talking with you and, you know, being able to provide a report in from your many boards and leadership positions. And so we look forward to having you on throughout this season as we explore various topics here at the Great Lakes Forward podcast series. And thanks again. Appreciate it.
Well, it's always good to be on. Thanks, Jade.
That will end it for episode 2 of Great Lakes Forward. I am Jade Davis signing off. We'll be back in a couple weeks with episode 3. Have a great one. Bye.
The Port of Cleveland is one of the largest ports on the Great Lakes. Over 20,000 jobs and $3.5 billion in annual economic activity are tied to roughly 13 million tons of cargo that move through Cleveland Harbor each year. The Port of Cleveland is the only local government agency whose sole mission is to spur job creation and economic vitality in Cuyahoga County and Northeast Ohio. The Port is the economic engine for the community, a key to Northeast Ohio's global competitiveness, and a crucial partner in building Cuyahoga County's future. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at Port of Cleveland. And on LinkedIn, you can find us at our official name, which is the Cleveland Cuyahoga County Port Authority. Follow us there and also subscribe to this podcast. Technical support and audio production provided by Shark and Minnow. Great Lakes Forward is sponsored by Logistec, the terminal operator of the Port of Cleveland.